Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo, and it's a pleasure to welcome back to VI Talk Nick Collins from Optimal O Vision. Hi Nick.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Strange times, but we'll keep going.
We will. Yeah, we'll carry on regardless. So do you want to start by telling us what Optimal O Vision is and what your role is?
Yeah, certainly. So Optima's kind of three companies sort of stuck to one. So the first part and where we started really was that we deliver NHS low vision assessments. So, you know, when people begin to have difficulty with their eyesight, they'll go to their optician, who will then refer on to ophthalmology, and ophthalmology is there to fix, mend and repair, but it's the what happens next situation. So when you have difficulty with everyday tasks, it's important you have vision rehabilitation, so low vision. So we carry out those assessments, particularly through the southwest of England now, and we've been doing that in different forms best part of 35 years now. The second part of what we do is that we deliver training as well. So different practitioners, different eye health professionals, whether it's rehabilitation officers, optometrists, hospital services, people who need training and how to support people, we deliver that. And what sits well with this is that we also provide low vision equipment. So because we see people in our clinics, we train people how to use equipment, we also provide equipment because of that. My role in Optima is I'm the director, but also my day job is I'm a low vision therapist. So I'm a certified low vision therapist. So my day job is sitting in the clinic, well, it used to be every couple of days, two, 3 days a week, working through the hospital service. So people be referred to me, and that's an NHS service. So where we kind of focus our work is on, say, education and vision rehabilitation. So a lot of people think low vision is about getting a magnifier and so on. And magnifiers are very helpful and, you know, they're extremely useful. But magnifiers only really address one problem, making things bigger. We also need to educate people on do they understand their eye condition? Do they understand how to make best use of their eye condition? And then what tools, what strategies, what's available to help people maximize the vision and you know, overcome some of the obstacles that they have.
So you talked about low vision equipment and you touched on magnifiers. So what else does that low vision equipment entail?
The first thing I would typically recommend is lighting. So a lot of people with the older population we tend to work with, you know, my average age of the patient I work with, it's about 82. So lighting is often underrepresented or underappreciated. So increasing and using lighting in a better way, you can often solve a lot of the problems. I tend to say about one in seven people I see in my clinic with increased or improvement of the way that they use lighting, they don't need a magnifier. So lighting's the first thing I'd look at. Obviously, magnifiers come in different shapes and sizes, and you know, that's a discussion in its own. So, you know, hand magnifiers, stand magnifiers. But other things that we can look at is when people have difficulty with glare. So if somebody has a problem with glare, typically what people do is they put a dark pair of sunglasses on. And although that addresses the glare, I've just talked about lighting, it reduces their ability to see. So people can exacerbate the problem. So what we tend to look at is different types of filters or tints to reduce the glare without compromising their ability to see. So we can do that type of an assessment as well. And in terms of equipment, sometimes it's simple, just simple things like using a clipboard. You know, when you're trying to read a newspaper and it's flopping all over the place, and just simple things like that as well.
Brilliant. So you listen to our podcast, which is very kind of you.
All right,
and
thank you.
You heard our interview with Judith Potts from Esme's Umbrella, founder of Esme's Umbrella. And we were chatting about Charles Bonnet syndrome, and you made some really good comments. You emailed us with some really good comments, and you have a slightly different take on certain aspects of Charles Bonnet syndrome, don't you?
Yeah. So first of all, the work that Judith Potts and Esme's Umbrella is fantastic. It's raising awareness. It's educating the population what Charles Bonnet is, how to manage it, more importantly, looking at research to better understand it in a sort of medical professional way. And you have people, you know, fantastic people. Dominic Fitch is fantastic. I've listened to him. I've had the privilege of listening to him in many, many conferences before. But it was just something that sort of struck a nerve with me. It was when Judith was talking about Charles Bonnet, she described it something, you know, it causes vivid, silent, visual hallucinations, which range from disturbing to terrifying. And that's simply not the case. There are a large number of people who experience Charles Bonnet syndrome, and it is negative. It causes problems, it causes upset, it causes confusion. And educating the person to understand what Charles Bonnet is fundamental to that. So I've worked with people who have had very negative experiences. So one lady, it caused an argument because she looked out of her window and she saw a parked car in her garden. And she'd phone her neighbour and say, move your car. And obviously there's no car, and it became an argument, and it really caused conflict. And, you know, other people who see very disturbing things, and it causes a lot of upset. But that's not the majority. Majority is a different thing. That's not all the cases. So I do work with people who their experiences are positive, or they experience Charles Bonnet and they don't mind it. They think it's actually quite enjoyable. You know, one lady who she said when she has the experience, she sees flowers in her visual field. So, and we talked about distraction techniques and how to manage each episode. And she said, no, I don't want to do that, because when I look in my garden, normally I just see pink blobs where my flower garden used to be. But when I experience Charles Bonnet syndrome, I see every flower and every detail that I used to. And I can't do that otherwise. You know, Charles Bonnet is my chance to see flowers as I once did. You know, so for some people it's an opportunity to see things in a way that they haven't or they can't anymore. Some people it's just random. You know, people see just very odd things. But it's talking about it in purely negative terms, I think, can be problematic, because if you're a friend or a family, or if you're a practitioner, or if you're a person who has a condition that can cause Charles Bonnet syndrome, and you've heard of it as being, you know, very, very negative, you know, it's disturbing, and it goes all the way up to terrifying, that can cause a lot of alarm and a lot of shock and a lot of fear. And I don't think it needs to be, you don't need to fear it. The work that Esme's been brought is fantastic, because it's raising the awareness of it. So if you do experience it, or a friend or family has described it to you, you can say, you're not going mad, you know, this is a thing to happen. So I worked with a gentleman last week, I spoke to him over the phone, and, you know, he hasn't had any, unfortunately at the moment we can't see him, but we wanted to put the groundwork in education, understanding his eye condition. And he'd mentioned about, you know, traveling in a car with his son, and he'd see a building site on his left-hand side as they drove down, and he mentioned it to his son. I don't remember them building all those houses. And his son says, come on, Dad, there's nothing there. And once he kind of described it to him and said, look, this is what Charles Bonnet can be, he says, that makes sense. Now I understand it. Now I can manage it. I can put it in context. I think that's where I kind of wanted to raise the point, in that it's not inevitably a damaging, horrible, terrifying thing. It can be, but its understanding is important. And I appreciate from Judith's perspective, she's working in a support group. You don't come up against people who are fine. You know, people access their support, access their help because they're having difficulty, because things are, they're terrified, because they're scared. And, you know, you don't call up a helpline because everything's okay. So I appreciate that's from her experience.
Yeah. In your experience, are there certain eye conditions that it's more common to experience CBS?
I would defer to people like Dominic Fitch here, but from my experience, it's mainly in the low vision clinic. So that's going to be predominantly macular degeneration. Mm. And perhaps that's because I see more people with macular degeneration than it is, you know, is it more common with different eye conditions and so on. But I think as Judith explained, it's a change in vision. It's a sudden drop in vision or change in vision, which can trigger Charles Bonnet syndrome. I personally wouldn't like to speculate if it's A, B, or C.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's really interesting because, you know, as an echo, we get people coming in and, you know, and sometimes they're quite tentative about talking about it because they feel a bit silly. And, you know, and it's that reassurance, isn't it, that, like you said, you're not going mad. And, you know, it's teaching the coping strategies as well, isn't it? Do you have any of those that you particularly find useful to people that you see?
I would be repeating what Dominic Fitch would be saying. So it's those distraction techniques, the sort of it's understanding what it is. It's knowing that it's a visual experience. It's not you don't hear anything. It's only one sense. The sort of looking at an object and then moving your eyes across and back and to and touching the pads in your fingers. Those distraction, I think, I'd say, again, another reason to visit Esme's Umbrellas is she's got a comprehensive list of potential techniques. But in terms of as your role as an ECLO, how do you broach that subject? I have difficulty. If I see a patient, I'm not going to suddenly say to you, have you seen things that aren't there? You know?
Yeah.
How do you bring that subject up?
It is quite difficult. I mean, sometimes patients will kind of broach the subject tentatively and they'll say, well, you know, I saw this, and you're like, and you kind of just, then you can kind of, you know, grow with that. But yeah, I do try and mention it, particularly with macular patients. But it is difficult, like you say, because you don't want to upset people. But I tend to kind of say, you know, have you experienced any visual disturbances or something like that, other than, you know, what you would expect to have with macular degeneration or something? Yeah. And then they will kind of go, oh, well, not really. And then they'll go, well, or maybe if they've got a relative with them, they'll go, yes, you did. The other week you did.
Yeah.
And that helps then if they've got a relative or carer with them, because they'll kind of bring that subject up or enlarge on it, so you kind of then can get all your information out and tell them about Esme's Umbrella, and, you know, which, as you say, is a really good source of information. So yeah, but it is difficult because you don't want to upset anybody and you don't want anybody to think that, you know, like they do, they go, oh, I'm going mad, and you're like, no, yeah, really, you're not, you're absolutely not. And it can go, you know, it can go and come back, and it can go and stay away forever, can't it? So
yeah, the triggers are important as well. So a lot of people feel they experience Charles Bonnet more when they're stressed, when they're upset as well. So they can have those triggers. But it's a very interesting subject. I think, you know, speaking to people who experience Charles Bonnet, and you ask them, you know, can you tell me what you've seen? And some of the things they say are the difference between Charles Bonnet and misrecognizing things. So a visually impaired person walks down the road, see something and thinks it's something else. Well, that's not Charles Bonnet. You know, they see a pile of coats on the floor and think it's a dog. Or that's more to do with the inability to recognize what you're looking at. But Charles Bonnet is very different, because what people describe, they can describe in minute detail, and they can describe it, you know, a lady who saw children running around her living room in brightly colored trousers and so on. And, you know, she could tell me the colors. She doesn't have the ability to see colors in that vivid way anymore. So it's really interesting. I think listening to talks. Typically, it was at the Macular Society conferences where they would have Dominic Fitch describe Charles Bonnet. I think it's so underrepresented in, you know, you worry for things like GPs and general practitioners and even perhaps ophthalmologists who don't always understand this can happen. Because, say, when Judith mentioned it happening with her mother, it's not that long ago.
Absolutely.
I think she said it was like 2014 or something. You know, that's not long ago.
Yeah, and it is worrying that, you know, ophthalmologists still don't mention it, and I don't know whether it's because they're afraid to bring it up, or they just don't know enough about it, or it's just they're so busy with you know, doing the other things that they've got to do, and it just goes by the wayside. So I guess as ECLOs, that's a big part of our role, I suppose. I always do try and mention it in a tentative way, because I just think actually it can be the difference between someone going away and thinking, God, I feel like I'm going mad, or I've even had people say, you know, could it be some form of dementia? Well, absolutely not, you know, but it does worry people. obviously, because, you know, if they're getting to a certain age where that could be a possibility, that's always a worry as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'd say it's reassuring people, and you can see the sort of the, whew, thank you. You
know, because yeah, they can absolutely. See
that sort of, it makes sense. And then that sort of sigh of relief. And this comes back generally to education. So, you know, when I work with a patient who has, for example, macular degeneration, one of the most important things you would say to that person, it causes central vision loss, but you do not go blind with macular degeneration. And reassuring people that is a fact. You do not lose your entire vision with macular degeneration. And with that sort of, you know, some information put out is a little bit alarmist. And I can appreciate sometimes that's to raise awareness, and sometimes that's to increase access to funding. And that's important. But, you know, when the stem cell research came out about 3-4 years ago now, the headline in the newspaper is cure for blindness found. So managing expectations.
We wish.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we're all in the line. We're all in the same line, I think.
Yeah, I know. And it is difficult, isn't it? But I think what you say you raised some really good points there. If somebody wanted to get some advice from Optima, what's the process? Do they have to have a referral from a hospital, or how does that work, Nick?
Well, there's two ways to access our service. One is as an NHS patient, but then you would need to be in our area. So we work from people who are patients at Torbay Hospital. We work for people who live in Somerset, or the GP is a practice in Somerset, and Dorset as well. So when that happens, if you are eligible, you can be referred to us via the ophthalmology, your community optician, optometrist, your Rovi, and indeed the ECLOs. And we try to open up those pathways, because there's nothing worse than having to go to your GP, to then go to your optician, to then go to the ophthalmologists, all the way around, when it could be quicker than that. So that's to access our NHS service. But if you're not in that service, we can work with you as a private person, as a customer. So, you know, whether you're looking at advice for lighting, magnifiers, or generally speaking, we can provide that advice. And, you know, I have worked with people, and it's, you know, a lady asked, she contacted her on behalf of her mother. She wanted a stronger magnifier because she wasn't seeing so well. And she'd mentioned that her mother's vision had dropped quickly recently. And I went, well, that's something you need to contact your optician for. So again, it's trying to sort of point people in the right direction from our perspective as well. And that, you know, and that's UK, worldwide, wherever it is, really. So they're the two ways you can contact us. So that's either telephone or email as well.
And do you want to give those contact details, Nick, if you've got them
timed? So our best one is, at this stage, is email. So that's sales@optimalowvision.co.uk. And our office number is 01803 864 218.
And is there any updates on when you might be back into seeing people face to face as yet, or is that still very much up in the air like the rest of us?
We need to manage it carefully, because, say, the majority of our patients are going to fall into that more vulnerable group. So working through the COVID secure workplace risk assessment, managing our clinics, or modifying the way that we deliver our clinics so it mitigates as much risk as possible. Nothing's going to be risk-free, and we appreciate some of our patients will choose not to attend because they don't want to, and we understand that. But we're looking, hopefully speaking, we're looking to restart in the next sort of four to six weeks. But again, 4 to 6 weeks in this time is a long time, so I'm not going to make any promises, I'm afraid.
No, things can change day by day, can't they, at the moment?
Indeed.
Yeah. Thank you ever so much, Nick, for joining me.
No problem. That's my welcome. It's my pleasure. It's always good to pop in with a VI talk. Listen to the podcast. So if, unfortunately, I do pop my head up above the parapet sometimes.
No, that's good. Like I say, you raised some really good points.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter at VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.